This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this episode, Reggie discusses embodiment on the spiritual journey. He says that oftentimes we approach meditation as spectators, always a step removed from direct experience. Embodied meditation, however, invites us to enter the full action of our lives. This talk was given at the April 2007 Meditating with the Body retreat held in Crestone, Colorado.
When we do the body work, we're going to have a lot of ideas about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And these are all valid. It's all valid. But, you know, truly, you know, part of my job is to talk to you from further down the road and to reflect back to you something about the journey. And when we do the body work, we are doing the most radical thing actually anybody could ever do. And it's much more radical than any of the known religions. Much more radical. And also much more accessible than the Aboriginal traditions, which are have tremendous profundity, but you know, for modern people, I mean, they developed in a very different time and place, and we can't go back and be, even Native Americans can't go back and be Native Americans the way it was 400 years ago, let alone those of us in modern culture going back and becoming Australian Aborigines or you know, Indians in the inner Amazon. I mean, it's just not, it's just really not an option, actually, for us. It doesn't mean we can't learn from them, but we can't become them. The body work truly changes everything when you do it. And there are a lot of insights and a lot of understandings that develop out of the work. And I think, you know, part of my job is to communicate those to you. So really there are two things I do. One is to talk to you about the journey. And the other one is to give you the tools to make it. And in the beginning, it's very eye-opening. It is like falling in love, only it's actually even more profound because it's more complete. The way our heart opens and the vista that we sense when we start doing this work in the very beginning, it's like, you know, we're standing out on a plane and there's all kinds of scenery, and my job is to sort of direct you to look into the distance and see the mountain that we're journeying toward. And once you see it, when we realize the possibilities of human life, which is really what I'm teaching and what I'm giving you the tools to actualize, it's hugely opening. But then you actually have to make the journey. And I need to emphasize this because, you know, we are in a, as I said yesterday, we live in a culture where everything is a spectator sport. Even sex now is a spectator sport. And we go to the movies to see it. Violence is a spectator sport. Killing people is a spectator sport. Sports are a spectator sport. And spirituality is a spectator sport. We go and we watch other people do it. But we are, we're not particularly brought up in this culture to realize that spirituality actually is not a spectator sport. It's a contact sport. And we have to make the contact. We have to make the journey. So I will just tell you this, you know, with the Meditating with the Body program and the people I meet, some people really understand they have to do it. And when they do it, see, the thing is, you have to take possession of the understanding and the insight and the experience that I'm communicating, and you have to do it for yourselves. And the only way to do it actually is to do the practice. You have to make the journey. And, you know, some people do it, and there are a lot of people who don't. They come, they're very inspired, they think it's really great, but then they get home and they say, you know, I'm really too busy to do this. I need to work those extra three hours a day at my job so I can make a little bit more money, and next year I'll do it. And I get lots and lots of emails from people saying, you know, I really couldn't keep it up this year, but next year I will definitely come back. I'm going to repeat the program, or I'm going to take the CDs and go through the whole program again on my own. And let's say the rate of fulfilling the aspiration isn't as high as I might hope. So this is my pep talk. Okay, I'm giving you a pep talk. It's very, very, you know, I would like to be the Newt Rockne of Meditating with the Body. He was a very famous Notre Dame football coach, and he could get his players to do anything. He was so impassioned himself and so eloquent. I'd like to be that person with you. I would like to communicate to you the importance of doing it, and if you do it, trust me, you will find everything that I'm talking about in your own experience, and that's really what it's about. So, you know, again, it's like falling in love. You see the totality of the relationship in the beginning, but then the work starts. You know, you find out that your partner actually, when they shit, it doesn't smell that great. And they do shit, unfortunately, you find that out. Well, I never really thought of that. And they get in bad moods, and you do things, and you're just trying to be a good partner, and it turns out to be completely the wrong thing. And all kinds of trouble comes up, and it goes on and on. And, you know, there are days when you feel, what am I doing with this person? My God, I must have been completely out of my mind. And the thing is, we were out of our mind. But actually in a good way, because we saw far beyond, we saw actually the goal, and we saw what can be attained with this person if we're willing to do the work. And it takes a lifetime, frankly. It takes a lifetime. It takes 20, 30, 40 years, you know, working with somebody to recover the feeling that you had in the very beginning. And often it gets lost for decades. And, you know, the discipline is the day in and the day out, being willing to be there, not running away, not getting caught in wishful thinking that there's some easier way or some other person somewhere. And sticking with the relationship and working with the other person, talking to them, talking through things, which is sometimes torture, terrible, you know, agony, you know, having to sit there and actually deal with what's coming up. And that is a... you know, that's an analogy of the spiritual journey. In fact, it is part of the spiritual journey itself. So we, you know, in the beginning we have a tremendous amount of inspiration, but it's so important to realize that that inspiration has been, it's a blessing, you know, really. The universe has blessed us by allowing us to have this very big view in the beginning of what's possible. And one thing that's very important is to trust that inspiration. To trust it. And there's, again, we come back to this thing which I do believe is rooted in original sin, which is rooted in agriculture, you know, the transition where we have learned to not trust the natural thing. to not trust nature, to regard what is natural as a potential adversary and an enemy. And, you know, original sin really is just a statement of the agricultural point of view, that's all. I mean, original sin is not an original teaching of Christianity. It's one expression among many of the distrust of nature that began with agriculture. And we have to realize, you know, we have that point of view. So we have a tremendous amount of inspiration, but then there's a tendency to not trust it. And this is incredibly heartbreaking when you see it in people, and I see it a lot in young people. They have a huge amount of inspiration toward their life, but they allow themselves to be infected by distrust. And they begin to, I see it in Naropa, they begin to distrust themselves, they distrust their inspiration, they distrust what they want for their life, they distrust their own inner voice, and pretty soon they're looking for all the authorities out there because they've lost the inner authority. And we have to realize we have that problem. You know, we are all ill with distrust. And you don't find this among Aboriginal peoples. When I was, I have this friend of mine from graduate school named Norman. He and I were best friends in graduate school. And he invited me to come to his college, Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, you know, a long time ago, 30 years ago. And I was giving a talk, and I was waiting in the, it's a Moravian college originally, and I was waiting in the library, you know, before I gave my talk. And there were these annals of the Moravian, you know, missionaries. And I just happened to pull one out, and I opened it up, and the missionary was saying, you know, it's very hard to, you know, missionaries to other people. They're saying it's very hard to tell people they need to be saved when they don't think there's any problem. And they were basically saying, you know, we gave up the mission because the people didn't think they needed to be saved. So talking to them about a savior, it was like they're looking at us like, what is your problem? So, you know, we have a lot of inspiration, and it comes from a very deep level about this practice and about a lot of other things. And, you know, what I want to say is it's so important to trust it. And if you trust the inspiration, then the second thing is we need to, if you're willing to trust your inspiration, willing to. It's not, do I? We're clear on that point. It's not like you either trust it or you don't trust it. Trust is an act of faith. Trust is not something that you have. Nobody trusts anybody. Nobody trusts anything inherently. Once you become an adult, you realize that the hopefulness of the small child, it's a stage on the journey, but it's not true. Nothing is inherently trustworthy in the sense of fulfilling, able to fulfill our expectations in a guaranteed way. There's nothing in life like that. Many people keep looking for that, to a fulfillment of that infantile desire, and it's never going to happen. We look for the spiritual teacher we can trust. We look for the therapist we can trust. We look for the partner we can trust in that sort of very naive, infantile way. And people spend their whole lives looking for it, and they spend tens of thousands of dollars trying to find it, and it never happens. And the reason it never happens is that desire of the infant is a developmental stage. And when we become adults, we realize that actually nothing is trustworthy in that way, in the sense of fulfilling our expectations or fulfilling what we think we need. It's never going to happen. Once we're clear on that, then we realize that trust is an act of faith in life itself. And then we're able to trust our inspiration and take a chance on it. When we do that, then stage number two is we actually have to do the work. And that's another place that modern culture undermines us. Now, this is not really a fundamental problem, because wanting to do the work, wanting to make the journey, is in our genes, as I've been saying. It's part of our genetic system. It's part of our biology. So we just need to see where we kind of get hung up and where we have, you know, where we get distracted from the fundamental priorities of our own being. And then we can work with it. Then we can make the journey. We can do the work, as my wife always says. You have to do the work. You have to make the journey yourself. Nobody's going to make it for you. So I just want to really encourage you about this. And a lot of times people will get involved with things that aren't right for them, and they can't, their inspiration becomes shaky, and they can't do the work. And this is a sign of intelligence. This is a sign of intelligence. In other words, some inspiration is actually wishful thinking. And sometimes things that we're asked to do aren't right for us. And I'll give an example just from my own experience. Traditional Tibetan Buddhism, often, not always, but often represents an alien cultural viewpoint and a set of practices that really are not actually right for Western people. And people will be, they catch a glimpse of what's possible, but then they take on this alien cultural viewpoint and some very, very complicated practices that don't really, they're not really connected with their own life. And what they think is, they think, well, actually, my inspiration wasn't valid, which in this case I think isn't true. I think it was valid. And I really can't do the work. But the reason they can't do the work is because it doesn't connect with their life. You see what I'm saying? So even if we've had a lot of experience in the past of trying to connect up and we can't really do it, it does not necessarily mean that we don't have that in us. It could be that we're actually trying to do something that's not right for us. There are certain people that just push ahead with something that's not right. And it doesn't open up their experience and it doesn't connect them more deeply with their life. They just force themselves to do it. Well, that's not a good thing. So it's back on you. This body work is about us in the deepest possible way. So it's a little bit different situation. And even if in the past we've sort of been caught up in a lot of wishful thinking about religion and how it's going to save us, and even if we, tried and failed to do things that people told us to do, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's not possible now with this work. Some of the smartest people refuse to comply with what the authorities have told them, whoever the authorities may be. But then at a certain point, when something actually comes to you that is valid and does open your life up, you have to kind of give up that oppositional attitude and you've got to trust yourself.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.